You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast on perennial allergic rhinitis hosted by Med Learning Group. This three-part series is titled Bridging the Gap, Aligning Guidelines, Patient Preferences, and Clinical Practice in Perennial Allergic Rhinitis. The program is geared towards members of the multidisciplinary care team who manage allergies, including allergists, immunologists, advanced practice providers, and other clinicians in both academic and community settings. In this episode, we'll be talking about presentation and assessment of perennial allergic rhinitis, or PAR, as well as some of the patient-reported outcomes tests available. My name is Chris, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. Joining me today is Dr. Scott Feldman. Dr. Feldman is an associate professor of clinical medicine in pulmonary, allergy, and critical care. He is also the allergy and immunology clinic director at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Dr. Feldman has been seeing patients with allergic rhinitis and other type 2 inflammatory conditions and has participated in educational events on these conditions for many years. Dr. Feldman, great to be speaking with you today.
Thank you, Chris. Very happy to be here joining you today.
So Dr. Feldman, just introduce yourself. I know I gave you a brief introduction, but how long have you been a caregiver for patients with allergic rhinitis, and how did you end up becoming involved in this field?
Yeah, of course. I've actually been working with patients with allergic rhinitis for about 10 years now, 2 years in training and 8 years of being in attending. I actually somewhat backed into allergy care. I'm a science nerd by training, an MD, PhD, who did a lot of research with B cells and making antibodies, allergic antibodies. And was more interested in the field for the immunology side of things and sort of became more involved in treating the far more common allergic rhinitis disease that affects many, many people. So that sort of became part of the training and just one of the many, many things that you end up treating as an allergist immunologist. So it's been good and fun.
So we're talking about perennial allergic rhinitis, or PAR, today. Give us a little background on the burden of PAR and allergic rhinitis in general. Who does it affect? How common is it? And that sort of thing.
Yeah, it feels like everybody in clinic. But of course, it's a very common allergic disease, probably the most common allergic disease, affecting 25% of children and 40% of adults worldwide. In more of the Western population, the prevalence, anywhere from 15 to 30%. Once you get into the actual diagnostic stuff that we do as allergists, generally it's kind of a late teen, early adulthood disease when it starts. So high prevalence, peaking like 16 to 24 and declines thereafter, although so I see many, many people who move locations and have it develop. In childhood and adolescence, it is the third most common chronic disease among kids and teenagers. Some have an increasing rate. About half of patients can develop symptoms before age 6. So it's certainly getting up there. Probably don't have child when listening to this. It has a huge economic impact, huge healthcare impact. In the U.S., probably every year is about $3.4 billion. So definitely affecting a lot of people and healthcare utilization. Tend to be people who get it, often have some kind of family history of ATP. More males, certainly if we can find allergen-specific IgE by skin testing, blood testing. If anybody is screening and finds a high total serum IgE before age 6, that certainly can increase the risk of developing allergies. And generally, people with higher socioeconomic status tend to be more in the groups that are seeing it. Allergic rhinitis comes along with many comorbidities in many people. This can range from asthma, atopic disease, allergic conjunctivitis, otitis media, and of course, sinusitis. So lots of other things kind of travel along with the allergic rhinitis we see very commonly in clinic.
Yeah, so it's definitely a common condition. It seems like everybody knows somebody who has quote-unquote allergies, whether they're seasonal or perennial, but very common. I want to focus today's discussion on the presentation and assessment of perennial allergic rhinitis. In particular, what are the most common presenting symptoms for a patient with PAR?
Yeah, great question. So, many of my patients start very generally. So, I ask, how can I help you? And they say, I can't breathe. And after first kind of figure out, are you talking about your lungs or your nose? Sometimes both, but usually people are complaining about nasal congestion. A lot of times sneezing. Patients will tell me how many times around they sneeze. I'm not sure that me hearing about 6 versus 20 sneezes makes a big impact, but that's a lot of sneezes. Postnasal drip, itchy throat, lots of throat clearing, throat mucus, that can be very bothersome to people. The allergic stuff often has itch associated, so itchy eyes, occasionally itchy ears I hear about. And then as a consequence of all that, fatigue, sometimes they hear about sinus headaches, all those things can be very bothersome for people and cause them to land at my medical doorstep, so to speak. Once I start talking to them, kind of while we're talking, I'm doing a limited exam and looking in their eyes, especially for ear round stuff, seeing sometimes a clear rhinorrhea or watery eyes or a clear rhinorrhea coming out the nose. All allergists, I think, have boxes of tissues just sitting next to them to hand out, because that's a common thing. When I start asking patients kind of, you know, when do you have these symptoms? How long have they been going on? Or is there a timing pattern and so on? Obviously, with the perennial stuff, it's going to be a year-round symptom, year-round problem. Many people with indoor stuff often complain it's worse in the morning. You know, we kind of speculate that they're breathing in something they're allergic to all night, and that's causing the morning symptoms to be worse. People can have the seasonal symptoms, of course, if there's only certain times of year, certain pollen, certain times of year that affect them. And then what we just kind of group as inducible. So maybe they don't have a pet, but they're very allergic to animals. And I'm generally discouraging them from having a pet in the first place. But they may have a family member or an in-law who's unavoidable and they have to go visit them. And they, with the animal exposure, have inducible rhinitis of those circumstances. As we've mentioned a couple of times, people with allergic rhinitis often have the associated symptoms. So sometimes, as I was saying, people also have asthma. But 80% of asthmatics do often have allergic rhinitis as well. People with a lot of pollen allergies or dust allergy can get oral allergy syndrome for some of the pollens. They're getting itchy mouth, itchy lips, tingling lips, mild swelling of the tongue or throat with raw fruits and vegetables. So sometimes patients think I'm brilliant because they come in, their complaint is certain fruits and vegetables make my mouth itch. And I say, oh, do you have congestion and sneezing in spring? And they're like, how'd you know that? I'm like, because that's usually how this goes. So yeah, all those associated symptoms, sometimes the chief complaint is one thing, but we end up uncovering some allergic rhinitis as a part of all that.
So within the broader category of allergic rhinitis and, you know, all the symptoms that you've just gone through, there's two main buckets, perennial and seasonal. So just kind of differentiate some of the characteristics for us between perennial and seasonal. What are the differences?
Yeah, so some of it is somewhat clear from the name. They named it well in this case, unlike some other medical conditions. But the seasonal stuff tends to occur seasonally during certain seasons. I often hear most about spring and fall, but that's just what I anecdotally tend to hear about. But these are typically people can complain of one or more season. Generally, these are outdoor pollens, tree, grass, weed. Some outdoor molds can affect people as well. These people are very bothered by the ocular symptoms. That's kind of the more predominant symptom. Itchy eyes, watery eyes, irritation in the nose. Sometimes itchy ears I hear about. Pretty strongly associated with the allergic conjunctivitis. These are generally lower annual healthcare costs. Again, if it's a seasonal thing, sometimes the way our systems are booked out, like by the time somebody gets to me, they'll complaining about something that happened 6 months ago that is already gone, and they just want a plan for next year when they're noticing their own seasonal pattern. But I often ask people, like, how are you in winter? Do you have anything in winter? And when they're like, no, I'm like, all right, this sounds a seasonal. The flip side of that is the perennial allergic rhinitis, of course, is a year-round problem. This is typically mostly from indoor allergens, dust, animal, some indoor molds, and cockroaches. These people, just because the chronic regular inflammation, they're often complaining most of nasal obstruction and congestion. They're the people saying, I can't breathe through my nose. They have a higher risk and prevalence of bacterial sinusitis, a higher total cost because they're kind of on these medications year-round, which cost them in the healthcare system more and needing to kind of get checked in different seasons. It can be difficult to tell without allergy testing. You know, someone who has a lot of outdoor pollens, again, they're probably bad like March through October. So really getting at winter, if things disappear or not in winter, can help distinguish by history seasonal versus perennial. And the last type that we briefly mentioned earlier is just the inducible. So some people are very animal dander allergic and through our recommendations might not have their own pet. But those people, kind of like seasonal, the timing, of course, will depend on the animal exposure. And there's different strategies for someone who has to spend, you know, an hour at someone's house versus going there for the holidays and they'll be there 2 weeks. Their medication treatment options might be a little bit different. So inducible definitely is on the agenda as well.
So in addition to seasonal versus perennial, there's another categorization, allergic versus non-allergic. And you can also have a combination of these two, mixed rhinitis. So talk about this. How do you differentiate allergic versus non-allergic?
Yeah, absolutely. So testing is very, very important. And often the second thing we do after talking to the patient is some kind of a testing there. You know, on the exam, you know, if we're seeing somebody who has perennial rhinitis or allergic rhinitis and they're caught during their season, their exam will show some findings, which we'll talk about more later, I'm sure. But the allergy testing is really going to help us try to figure out what allergy they might have. I always kind of teach the fellows that the allergy testing should kind of make sense for what you're predicting in the first place. So if someone is complaining of year-round symptoms, you're probably looking for something year-round, like dust or an animal dander. And if they're complaining of seasonal symptoms, we're generally looking for a pollen that aligns with the season. So someone who complains of symptoms only in the spring, but their testing shows, you know, a cat allergy and they don't have a cat, probably haven't found the answer, because that doesn't really, the testing doesn't explain the symptoms that they're having. So this is when we often start discussing non-allergic rhinitis, which is trying to explain to people is more of an irritation. So if you sit in a building on fire and breathe in the smoke, which I don't know why we sit in the building, but the smoke can be very irritating, and it will make your eyes water, your nose run, sneezing. Some people might start coughing because it's irritating all the respiratory epithelium and it's trying to get it out of there. And so for a lot of people, some of those irritant triggers, sometimes it's just like the debris from all the tree junk and flower junk in the air in spring. In Philly, we get the cherry blossoms. Sometimes all the particular matter is bothersome. A lot of people, strong odors and smells can be very irritating. Sometimes asking some of those history questions, like, are there any smells bother you? And people get very dramatic, like, oh, my sister wears a lot of perfume. I can't go to her house because all the perfume makes me sneeze. I've had patients get mad at me if I sanitize my hands because the smell bothers them. So I hear about all kinds of smells. And some people, just the weather changes. You know, when we have those times in spring when it's 80 one day and 40 the next day and all over the place, that can be very irritating for noses. So asking some of those questions definitely can help. As I was saying, the allergy testing really helps find an allergy cause, and it should align with the seasons that they're saying. The last piece here is really just if you find something they're allergic to, you can't really call the whole thing non-allergic rhinitis because there is some allergy there. So as I was saying earlier, someone might have a cat allergy, but they're never around cats, but their symptoms are really seasonal in the spring, but we can't find any outdoor pollen allergies to align. So I might call that mixed rhinitis and explain to the patient, like, your springtime stuff is irritant, non-allergic triggers. You also have a cat allergy, so you might need some treatment if you're ever around cats or ever had your own cat. But that I would call mixed rhinitis because there is evidence of sensitization and you can't call the whole thing non-allergic in that case.
So examination, when you conduct your physical exam, what are some of the exam findings that you commonly see in somebody with PAR?
Yeah, absolutely. So generally, you know, these people are getting a full HEENT exam. Often, you know, you're starting looking at the patient's face. Sometimes you can see some of the allergic shiners under their eyes, just kind of some discoloration, swelling. In kids sometimes, adults too, you can see some of the allergic crease, just kind of outside of the nose, a little bit of like indentation of things folding in. Kids sometimes do what's called the allergic salute, which is kind of wiping their nose up because their nose has constant clear rhinorrhea, so they're always kind of rubbing it. You can sometimes see them do that. Adults do it too. In my clinic, they often just ask me for the box of tissues. But from there, you know, we're looking in the eyes, so you can sometimes see injected conjunctiva, so a little bit of redness and irritation in there, the wateriness. On the nasal exam, looking at the turbinates. So regular turbinates should kind of be not enlarged and a happy pink. From the chronic inflammation, just kind of persistent daily stuff and inflammation in the nose, with perennial, the turbinates become swollen, they become boggy, this kind of a pale or sometimes a more violaceous color. Sometimes I can barely get the scope inside past the inferior turbinates because they're so swollen that they're almost touching the septum. So I often comment on that in my note. Occasionally I have somebody who, you know, their turbinates are so swollen, I'm worried they can't even get a nose spray in there because it's not going to get through to where it needs to go. And sometimes we have to go with a little bit of an oral steroid medication briefly to shrink the turbinate stuff to have the nasal steroid spray work effectively. So that kind of exam piece can help. I have looked in noses and seen polyps, which can be separate from allergies, can also be, you know, as a part of just regular inflammation. And then sometimes getting my ENT colleagues involved if that's the case or unclear. And then the back of the throat, we can often see a lot of cobblestoning from just chronic postnasal drip. If there's stuff always dripping down, that over time will just irritate and make this pattern known as cobblestoning, which looks like a cobblestone road. Just kind of some blood vessels and tissue scattered throughout there. So yeah, all this stuff just kind of confirms what usually people are telling you and can kind of drive the decision on what to test and how, what kind of testing that you're going to do.
So when you see a patient who matches the above symptoms that you discussed earlier and, you know, some or many of the exam findings you just discussed, and you're ready to diagnose allergic rhinitis, whether perennial or seasonal or what have you, do you further classify it based on, I don't know, characteristics such as how long they've had symptoms or how bad their symptoms are at this time?
Yeah, all those things certainly factor into how I'm explaining it to the patient and how I'm kind of thinking about approaches. People who are having more intermittent symptoms or intermittent durations, so sometimes that's like less than 4 days a week or hasn't been going on that long, less than 4 weeks or so, you know, occasionally I'm like, did you just have a really bad cold or is there a sinus infection going on that we just need to treat? You know, sometimes it kind of sounds more like that. I'm like, maybe you don't need allergy testing yet. We'll kind of see. And then more persistent symptoms, this is more than 4 days a week or more than four consecutive weeks is really when this has been going on a long time. As I was saying, with our schedules, I think all allergists struggle sometimes with getting people in when things are bad. Often by the time they've got to me, we've either uncovered that it was seasonal and has gone away or has persisted until they can finally get an appointment. So all those things can factor in. And then, you know, we also kind of think about the severity. Severity of the diagnosis can really help us tailor our treatment plan. Someone with very mild symptoms probably doesn't want to do two nose sprays and allergy shots. Someone with more severe symptoms, you can usually convince them to do more so that they can feel better. I kind of think about mild allergic rhinitis as they have symptoms that they can tell, but they're not really interfering generally. So their sleep is okay. They can do all the activities they want. They're not really like scared to go outside or limiting outdoor sports or leisure activities. They're going to work normally. They're going to school normally. They might have symptoms again. In my experience, these kind of mild people, they rarely come to see me. I feel like they're often just either telling their primary care or buying stuff over the counter. I see a lot of people getting evaluated for penicillin allergy, and when I'm talking to them about other stuff, they're usually like, oh yeah, like I have some mild stuff. I take a loratadine here and there, but it's not really a big deal. I've never bothered getting testing or getting medical care. So I feel like I tend to see people for rhinitis less so for mild, just because they do whatever they do on their own. But by the time they get to me and they want help with the complaints we've discussed already, they tend to be more in the moderate to severe category. And these are people where, you know, they have allergies and their life is affected. So they're not sleeping well because they're congested. Occasionally I get someone who they're not bothered by their sleep, but their spouse is bothered by the snoring or that they're keeping them up, which is unpleasant. And they, you know, other things they can't do. So their activities are getting impaired. They're kind of like, oh, I've had to skip outdoor sports because I can't be out there with the grass. Sometimes they're happy. They say, I don't have to mow my lawn anymore because it makes me sneeze. So I got out of that activity, but, missing work, missing school, they're just, you know, between the not sleeping well and fatigue and congested, they're just bothersome all the time. Anyone I see who kind of, talks to the public for a living, you know, teachers or lawyers, they're like embarrassed to have a runny nose and sneezing, and they're just constantly wiping their nose, and they don't want to do that at work. So all that stuff can be very interfering. So that's definitely on more the moderate to severe side, where they're it's affecting their job and their life, not just a mild annoying symptom.
So along these lines, you kind of discussed some of the quality of life issues, abnormal sleep, problems at work, school, just kind of the daily toll of what congestion, runny nose, and constant runny, you know, watery eyes takes on a person. So along these lines, how about patient reported outcomes? How do you get at some of these quality of life measures? Are there tests or validated instruments that clinicians can use to see the extent that their symptoms are affecting their daily quality of life?
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple of very good validated questions that can be used. As I was saying, sometimes patients, by the time they get to me, they don't often remember all the details. So I think these validated items kind of help prompt people to reflect on what brought them to the doctor in the first place. depending on the patient, sometimes they have a notes app full of stuff, other times less so. The first one is the RQLQ, rhinoconjunctivitis quality of life questionnaire. This is a kind of disease-specific health-related instrument for seasonal or perennial allergic rhinitis, more for adults, kind of 17 to 70. This is 28 items with a one-week recall. There's 7 different domains that can be asked about, from patient activities, trouble sleep, nasal and ocular symptoms, symptoms outside of nose and eyes, and how this affects their practical problems and emotional function. It's a 7-point scale, and with all those added up, the higher score is lower quality of life. So that definitely can be a useful tool to kind of get a sense of how much this is impacting someone's quality of life. Again, some patients are more or less open to certain treatments, and sometimes having something objective to go over of kind of driving them to like, no, you see how bad this is, you really need to be using your nose spray every day, or we have to talk about allergy shots and how you can get to clinic with that kind of a thing. Another useful tool is the RCAT, so Rhinitis Control Assessment Test. A little bit shorter. This has about 6 questions that kind of goes through how often in the past week people have had symptoms from congestion, sneezing, watery eyes, how much it's affected their sleep, activities, and how controlled they do or do not feel. This has a 5-point scale, and people with lower numbers here can be used to identify those with having a lot of control issues with their rhinitis. This is kind of just a general control assessment of how well they're doing. Again, another objective tool that you can kind of use to track if you're making interventions, to do it a follow-up visit and kind of help explain to the patient that they're better or not, depending on how they answer the questions at that time. So these tools are both pretty helpful at just kind of getting something objective to quantify for patients how things are going, and really kind of help them along in the treatment pathway.
So to wrap up in the last minute or two that we have, for our clinician audience, what would you say is one of the most important or most difficult challenges in managing patients with PAR, and how do you overcome this challenge?
Yeah, I think sometimes it depends on what the allergen is. You know, you asked me about PAR, but briefly, for seasonal stuff, you know, it's hard to tell somebody you can't go outside. That's just not going to happen. So oftentimes getting some of the avoidance measures in place. I will say for pet allergy or pet dander as a cause of perennial, people really, really love their pets. And I almost never can convince someone or even start fighting the battle to get rid of an animal. It's just never going to happen. So that I personally find is one of the biggest challenges. So we often have a conversation of like, maybe you want to talk to your cat or dog and keep them out of the bedroom. So at least you have somewhere that you can kind of sleep for, in theory, 8 hours. You know, I tell people that won't work in one day, and it need time to kind of let the dander fade away in the background. But that really can make an impact for people with a kind of more severe animal dander if they have a pet at home. So people love their pets. Is challenge is getting them to modify that behavior. You know, for people with more of a dust seasonal allergy, we often have that dust conversation. This is where I think some shared decision making, which I'm sure we'll talk about in another episode, but some people are just, they're too busy. You know, maybe we have a conversation about hiring a cleaning person. To people who are more medication adverse, sometimes I can't convince them to do the nose spray every day. So we might be having a conversation about allergy shots if they have more than one perennial allergen. Sometimes people would rather invest in like a dust mite cover or something as more of an avoidance strategy. Again, medication options. So these are all different things that I end up talking with people about. But I think the challenge is often convincing someone that like they can get better, and that the different tools can all add up together. So it's just kind of finding the right plan for them. So yeah, altogether, I think just getting people on a good medication regimen and having them have the time, energy, and resources to invest in avoidance measures where possible, those are some of the challenges that I face. But I think they all can be overcome with conversations and medications over time.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Feldman. There's obviously been a good deal of improvement in the understanding of the pathophysiology and assessment of allergic rhinitis, as well as distinguishing perennial and seasonal variations and some of the quality of life measures you discussed. I'm glad we could talk about some of these today. But that's all the time we have. Thanks again, Dr. Feldman, for taking time out of your day to speak with us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining. Hopefully you'll be able to tune into the second and or third podcasts in this series. in which we'll explore some of the current evolving treatments in podcast 2 and a few concepts surrounding shared decision-making and multidisciplinary care in podcast 3. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. In support of improving patient care, MedLearning Group is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would also like to give a special thank you to our educational grant supporter, Lily, who provided an educational grant for this activity. Thank you very much and have a great day.